The Warrior Soul podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppinfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? I have an absolutely outstanding guest for you today. His name is Mike Ritlin. Mike served as a United States Navy SEAL. He's also one of the top area experts in the world when it comes to working dogs. He's authored 3 books, and he is the go-to guy when it comes to trying to find a dog who's going to do a job, whether it's for the police, whether it's for the military, you name it, this guy knows about these dogs better than anybody else. He's also got an absolutely outstanding podcast, and I am a huge fan of the Mic Drop podcast. He does it in a way that I believe is different from what most other people are doing out there. And here's the deal. When it comes to podcasts, and I don't like bad-mouthing other podcasts because I've fallen into this too, but when it comes to podcasts, a lot of them are just kind of clones of each other. Like, you'll listen to an interview, guests will go on to multiple different shows, and when you hear a guest on one show, the interview sounds exactly like the same thing you get when you go to other shows. That doesn't happen on the Mic Drop podcast. He does a really excellent job. He goes deep, and he brings on some guests that you're not going to find anywhere else. A couple of my favorite episodes, he did one with codenamed Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker was one of the interpreters in Iraq. He was an Iraqi interpreter, and he worked with the Navy SEALs, and he wrote a book about his experience. And that interview that Mike did with him, I think every American should be required to listen to that interview. It just was absolutely outstanding. He also brought on Eddie Gallagher. He gave Eddie Gallagher, the Navy SEAL who was accused of doing all kinds of horrible things, he gave Eddie Gallagher a chance to speak. And he didn't go easy on Eddie. And one of the things I say to Mike during this interview is you got things from Mike doing the interview that you wouldn't have gotten from somebody from 60 Minutes because Mike has his expertise as a Navy SEAL. He understands leadership. You're not going to get that from some reporter or anything like that. And I loved the way that he gave Eddie a chance to speak and to tell his side of the story of things. I had a great conversation with Mike. We talked about how he got his business started, how he made his transition out of the SEALs. We talked a bit about politics, and that's another thing about Mike. He's not scared to offend anybody. And that's where I tried to bring this interview. And I really wanted to bring that out of Mike in this interview. And I hope I did a good job of that for you. At any rate, I'm a huge fan of Mike. I'm really, really happy he came on the show. Hope you guys get a lot out of this interview. Hope you enjoy it. And here's the deal, guys. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What I do here is I bring information to empower U.S. military veterans to live their best lives so that they could show up as wiser, stronger, more capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. Try to deliver tools, tactics, and strategies for you guys so that you can apply them right after you listen to one of these episodes. If you enjoy this podcast, I don't care if you ever spend a dime with Warrior Soul, ever. All I need from you is to share these episodes out and spread the word about us. And you do that in a couple of ways. You could share these episodes with somebody who needs them. You could tell people about the show. You could head over to iTunes and just write us a written rating and review. And also, please make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. None of that costs you anything. It takes just a second. And every time you do it, you're helping me to put this information to the ears of more veterans. So I appreciate all of you. I really appreciate Mike Ritlin for coming on here. And I'm going to stop yapping my trap over here and let's get into this awesome conversation. Mike Ritlin, welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
I was just telling you before we hit record, I am a huge fan of your podcast, man. You do the job really, really well.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I'm always humbled to have support of anybody, but especially fellow podcasters and interviewers. So it means a lot coming from you. I appreciate it.
What made you decide to get started?
So it was a kind of a combination of a few different things. I'd say primarily it was just a lot of different people had asked if I'd considered it or if I would consider it, or they just thought it was a good idea. And I wouldn't say scoffed at it, but I was like, well, that's your opinion. I appreciate it. But, and just after a couple of years of being kind of approached or asked about doing it enough, I was like, well, screw it. Why don't I give it a shot and see how it goes? That in conjunction with, I do legitimately enjoy, sitting down with the people that I've had on and having that opportunity to kind of, ask whatever you want to, the people that have the stories that they have. To me was just, it was a really neat opportunity. And I think the last thing is, I would say equally as big of a deal in terms of it contributing to why I started, which was just with everything being so politically correct, in today's day and age with between media and even a lot of other podcasts that are sponsored by corporations that, want to edit it or censor certain things. They don't want to talk about certain things. They don't want certain swear words or whatever. There's a significant portion of the population that really craves and is starved for that type of dialogue because it's so rare and so few and far between nowadays. So it gave me an opportunity to kind of be myself. Sometimes when I'd go on other people's shows or whatever, they would ask, hey, can you not say this? Or, I'd rather you didn't swear or, I'd prefer not to talk about X or whatever. And so it's a bit on the cathartic side for me, I think, and almost in a therapeutic way, being able to let the hair that I don't have down and just talk about whatever suits our fancy. So it's been a neat project going on right at about 2 years now. So I've really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Just being a podcaster, there's a couple of things here. Number one, being a podcaster, I look at a lot of podcasts, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and so many of them are just kind of clones of other podcasts. You get the same guests, people, the same questions. You've had some absolutely awesome guests. That Johnny Walker episode you did was outstanding. I was listening on the way back from 29 Palms because I had to go out there, and it was just, I was enthralled the whole time just listening to the conversation.
Oh, man, that's awesome. To me, that's really the best compliment I could receive. I mean, to me, the goal is you don't want the interview, even if it's a 3.5 or 4 hour episode, which, you know, many of them are, you know, to me, if at the end of it, people are like, fuck, I could have listened to you for another 5 hours. Like, then I did my job right. And that's really my goal is to be entertaining, not necessarily shock jock value. You know, a lot of times people, I think, kind of ask, you know, why the edge, or, you know, why ask some of the questions you do. I mean, and for me, it's really about, that's what I'm interested in. I know there's a lot of other people that would ask or want that same question asked. And I, you know, the whole, I don't, you know, we don't give a shit about your feelings in the prelude is, it's not like a Howard Stern or, you know, Johnny Knoxville jackass kind of thing of let's see, you know, what's the most ridiculous thing we can say to get a rise out of somebody. That's for sure not the angle. Mm-hmm. I never go out of my way to piss anybody off or ruffle any feathers. I don't consider that, you know, if I do, like, I don't care if I do ruffle feathers or piss people off. So, it's been a good balance, I think, of, you know, kind of cutting through the bullshit and getting the real story, so to speak, from, you know, a lot of people that, being on a lot of other interviews, especially mainstream media, but even a lot of other podcasts, that people just, like you said, aren't really asking the questions that I think most people want asked, or they're all kind of the same, and it's just pretty generic. And you know, to me, if I listen to a podcast and that, you know, 20 minutes in, I'm just like, man, this is just boring. I don't even want to listen anymore. Then you know, you lose me there. And so I'm, you know, really my goal is to not be that guy, but.
Yeah. You know, the other aspect of it is this, man. And what I like about it is that you really do dig into the human being. It's not like some shock jock kind of thing. But the other aspect of it is this, man, you know, with the way things are going on today, in the political realm and in the, you know, the SJW realm and everything like that, I think that people forget that this experiment that we have in a constitutional republic is still an experiment. And I think what podcasts like yours do and some of the other ones like Jocko's and humbly I'll say mine as well, is that what you're essentially doing is you're training people how to be free. Right. And I think that's important. It's so important because people forget, you know?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. And I think maybe even more importantly is you at least help them or help give people an ability to at least think freely, you know, because the action will follow the mind in most cases, I think. And that's, I would say, our society's largest problem. And I'm not immune to this. I don't think anybody is. I think we all get ingrained and conditioned in some ways, you know, whether it's keeping up with the Joneses with materialistic bullshit or whatever it is. Is that sometimes you get kind of brainwashed into that. And I think probably the thing that I love most about the podcast as a medium is that there's no middleman, there's no corporate influence, there's no bullshit, or at least it has that potential to be raw and completely unfiltered. Obviously the bigger they get and the more, you know, you get approached by big corporations that, you know, that want to be a part of it and disseminate it and take it to the next level, which, you know, I've had on more than one occasion offers to do that and have turned every one of them down, because at the end of the day, there was always, you know, the contract was always, you know, full creative control and you can ask and talk about whatever you want, but there was always the fine print at the very bottom that said, if there's something that we deem offensive or just not in line with our brand values, blah, 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 we have the authority to take it out. And I said, fuck no. Yeah. You know, that the whole reason people listen to my episode, you know, the 9 people that do, you know, is because I don't take that into consideration. So, you know, I think that's an important distinction for sure.
Well, I want to come back to this in a second. I want to, you know, for it, pretty much anybody who listens to my show probably knows who you are and they probably listened to your show before, but I want to get a little bit back in your background. Served as a Navy SEAL. You're one of the top area experts as far as dogs go. And, I want to talk a little bit about your career, because I know that you had to get out because of a lung infection, correct?
Well, sort of. I mean, I was offered the the chance to stay in, or the opportunity, I guess is probably a better word. But I was not convinced that medically I really would have been able to do it. When I first was diagnosed with a lung condition, it's called valley fever or coccidiomycosis. I was actually offered a medical retirement then, and this was back in 2004, excuse me. And, at that time, you know, my first child was on the way. I was fairly newly married, and you know, I had no college degree, no plan on getting out of the military at that time. So it really kind of caught me off guard. And so I just asked the Master Chief and kind of that I was working for at the time, who I still keep in touch with to this day, amazing guy. But I kind of told him what was going on. I said, "Look, here's the deal." And so he worked a deal with, you know, the BUDS Master Chief at the time, and they kind of figured out a way to move me over to the basic side, because the biggest stipulation was after my almost 9 months of convalescent leave, which is almost unheard of in the military, was that, you know, you can't be around anything that will cause lung irritation. You know, and pretty much every aspect of being a Navy SEAL, you're in environments where that's the case. And the only exception is being a BUDS instructor. There's not a lot of stuff going on there lung irritant wise. So I went over there and finished my time there, got my degree, had both my kids, and did some other schooling through the GI Bill while I was there, and formulated kind of a better plan to be way better set up to get out. And then at that time I was still offered a handler position on the West Coast SEAL canine program. You know, they offered that position, but I honestly was not convinced that physically I would have been able to really keep up with it. You know, I lost about 40% of my lung capacity, for good. And so it was just, for me, it was largely a personal decision of saying, you know, I think I can, A, make more of an impact by starting my own company and training lots of dogs, handlers, putting on courses, importing, breeding, whatever. You know, I'd rather be around now that my kids are here. You know, I've been gone nonstop for the last 12 years. And then lastly, I wasn't 100% confident in my own physical ability to be able to do the job and provide, you know, asset type augmentation vice being a liability to the team. And so all of those things combined, it was relatively easy decision for me to get out. Still tough to separate after basically growing up in the Navy, because I came in right at 18 and got out when I was a little over 30. So you know, kind of the growing up years of your life, if you will. But ultimately, I wouldn't be where I am today had I stayed in, and I think everything's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I want to ask you, you know, what was that like for you psychologically? Like, were you initially focused on potentially opening up a business, or did that come to you after a while, or was there a period where you had to adjust and had to say, okay, this is my new life now, and this is what I got to work toward?
So it was psychologically not difficult at all, which I feel very, very fortunate in being able to say that, because with a lot of guys, I don't think it is. And I think the reason that it wasn't for me, looking back on it, is that because I had a pretty tangible plan and purpose built, you know, execution style plan of how to go about obtaining that goal. And there was an element absolutely of me wanting to start my own dog company, and do dogs for a living, so to speak. I was not 100% sure on how I was going to do that. And so when I first got out, I actually took a job with ExxonMobil as a drilling rig supervisor. So I did a little bit of contract, stateside contract work, teaching some just basic pistol and rifle marksmanship to some, active duty Army, first armored division guys through this contractor program that was going on at the time. And while I was doing that, you know, got the interview at Exxon, got the job, and then started working for them, you know, within a couple weeks of being separated from the Navy. And I spent that time, which was only, I mean, it wasn't even quite a year. It was just shy of a year. It was about 10 months that I worked for them. And while I was doing that, you know, was getting everything set up. I, you know, it was a unique position schedule wise in that I had 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off. So the 2 weeks I was on, I was gone and working and whatever. But then when I was home, I had 2 full weeks to work nonstop on, like I said, laying concrete and putting kennels up and administratively getting stuff in order. And I partnered with a couple of other special operations guys that had pretty extensive contractor experience, as well as business experience. And then we launched the first dog company, did that for a few years, kind of had a little bit of a falling out, myself and one other gentleman, with the other guy, just leave it at that, you know, and spare you the details. But, and then started my current one, Tricos, right after that. And that's when, I finished up my time at the West Coast on, the multi-purpose canine program for the SEAL teams out there. It all kind of came together at once. As I left the West Coast, I started the new company, and then it was just me 100%. Wrote the books, did the 60 minutes, and kind of launched into my own dog company from there. But to your question, circling back, even though, you know, if I think back to like what I thought I would be doing back then versus what I'm doing now, and the pivots that I've made and the transformation process that's taken place in that, you know, almost 12 years now, you know, while I didn't plan every step of the way, you know, it was what I wanted to do in terms of make a living working with dogs in some capacity in these types of dogs. So having that as kind of the backdrop that I always kept my pivots and my, you know, adjustments that I needed to make business wise, like any entrepreneur does, that was always at the forefront, and provided the necessary context for me to continue to do everything how I was doing it. So, you know, again, I've seen a lot of guys struggle with getting out and not having a purpose and being pretty fucking miserable. And I feel for those guys. And I, again, I think it just makes me even more, humbled and just very gratuitous knowing that, that I didn't have to deal with a lot of that. So.
Well, you're fortunate, but you also found the purpose. Like you can't just kind of sit there and wait for purpose to show up. You kind of go out.
No, for sure.
Get it right.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be something that you enjoy. I mean, to me, without the enjoyment and the passion and the drive and desire to want to do whatever that is, you know, purpose, like you said, it's not just going to manifest itself out of an activity, you know. So if there is anybody listening that is, you know, has struggled with that or is struggling with that, I mean, to me, start there. You know, figure out whatever it is that, you know, what do you like doing the most that's at least productive. I mean, if it's playing fucking video games, now granted, there are people that do it for a living and actually make millions of dollars. But I mean, that's, you know, the outliers. To me, that's not really a plan. That's like playing the lottery thinking that that's your fucking retirement plan. You know, like that's not really applicable. But, you know, finding some purpose and something that's productive, and then figuring out a way, you know, to turn that into, you know, something to be monetized or a business or at least a career or something of that nature, I think is a really good and positive, important first step, to finding that purpose that I think a lot of people lack.
Right. Exactly. It's got to, you got to bring value to the table. And if you're just sitting there and you're just thinking and philosophizing and doing things that aren't going to bring value to the table, then it's not going to work out, and you're not going to have something that people are going to want to take part in and to support you with.
No, agreed. I think that's one of our society's biggest problems is, you know, and it's the way that we've collectively raised our kids, I think, for a couple generations now. And they've always been told that they're special and that they're valuable and they're important. And, you know, and some of that is good and necessary. But when it's overdone, you know, to me, that's where you cross over into an entitled societal generation where now they have to be told that they're amazing at everything, or their self-esteem and confidence folds like a fucking lawn chair and they become useless. You know, and while that, I think, has the potential to be, you know, a little bit of a balancing act in making sure that you affirm kids growing up and help with their self-confidence, it can't be so much to where it turns them into entitled little pricks. And, you know, being a father, the way I've tried to couch that is, it was essentially, you know, find things for them to do and to overcome, you know, test them a little bit and then tell them that they've done a good job. Cause to me, if you, you know, it's like the kids that you see on American Idol that just plain fucking suck, you know, and their mom's like, no, honey, I'm your biggest fan. You're amazing. Like, no, you're not. You suck. You know, and the fact that this is the first time you've been told that tells me, you know, that unfortunately your parents did it wrong, you know, and just like with a lot of things, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Like their heart was in the right place and it's born out of a good place, you know, out of love and good intentions. But unfortunately it has the unintended negative consequence of the exact opposite impact you were hoping to have. And so, you know, there's an element of that, I think, that, you know, that should be reflected on societally. But
absolutely. I agree 100% there. Coming back to that, you know, as far as business goes, you mentioned you had some early struggles with a falling out. And, you know, that's been a similar experience for me. You know, I fell flat on my face multiple times when I was trying to get into business. You know, when you're starting a business, a lot of times it's like drinking from a fire hose. Did you take business classes when you were going to school? Where did you learn most of the stuff? You said you had mentors, you had people around you who were teaching you a bit. Was that a little bit crazy at the beginning, or was it something that you learned as you went along and you finally found your footing?
So I would say a little bit of both. I did not take any business classes. I have no formal business training other than, you know, the School of Hard Knocks. Having said that, you know, the painful lessons that I learned initially, you know, are ones that I look back on now, and there's for sure a silver lining to them, you know, and it was hard, really hard at the time, because I felt completely robbed, which I was, frankly. I mean, I was. I mean, myself and the other guy that I actually am still friends with, both of us were completely fucked over by the other guy. You know, and so for me, it was a good moment, I think, in being able to utilize the mentality that the SEAL teams had really forged into my young, impressionable mind as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old checking into SEAL Team 3. You know, and spending over a decade around, you know, some of the best men on the planet and really being taught how to handle yourself in the face of both danger and fear and defeat. You know, and while I think, generally speaking, people kind of fall into one of two categories, and that's they let that victim mentality define and control them, their emotions, their actions, or their inactions in many ways. Or you either use that to fuel, you know, the getting up and saying, okay, well, you know, success is the best revenge and I'm going to shove it up their ass now. You know, and to me, like it, almost every decision in life really kind of boils down to that. I mean, everybody's handed a shit sandwich at some point, some people over and over and over, you'd think they're at the shit buffet with how many times they get handed that. And really the only thing that separates people who are legitimately successful versus everybody else is the person that I don't give a shit what happens. You move on, you put it behind you and you focus on the next thing. And, you know, primary lesson I have learned as a entrepreneur and businessman, having had several different, you know, revenue stream ideas that I put a lot of work and thought into and thought was a home run and it completely fucking failed. You know, I can tell you, you can sit around and feel sorry for yourself, or you can completely fucking forget about it and move on and just, you know, on to the next and put, you know, put those lessons in your back pocket and know, you know, the reasons why it failed and don't make those mistakes again and stay positive and just keep crushing it.
That's great advice. That is great advice. You know, and without getting into the specifics of what happened with you and the other guys, probably a good thing to say here, a good take home piece of advice would be to have a good operating agreement in place if you're getting into business with other people too, right?
Well, it is, you know, but I guess for me, it's one of those things where, you know, those ultimately are only as good as the people that are drafting them and signing them. Mm-hmm. You know, and for a guy like me that had at that point, zero business experience, I mean, literally absolutely zero business experience, I just didn't know any better. You know, we had an operating agreement, but it didn't matter because it wasn't a good enough one to protect me from what happened. And you know, from my experience, you know, the ability to work around those, if somebody is a shady prick, you know, is going to be there, you know? And so to me, even more so than a solid operating agreement, yes, that's important. I think an even more important thing is making sure that the person that you're signing that with, you know, is as trustworthy as you can possibly get. You know, there's no guarantees, but you know, it was a tough lesson learned for sure. And, you know, certainly made me wise up on some things, but I would say that, you know, at least as much as trying to understand paperwork better and having better things in place ahead of time, as it taught me not to trust people just because they were cut from the same cloth as me, or on the transverse, don't not trust somebody because they have a totally different experience than also. So for sure it was good lessons learned, but.
Absolutely. And, you know, in addition to, you know, all the business knowledge that you have and, you know, your public persona with your podcast, you are one of the top area experts in your field, which is with working dogs. And wanted to ask you, cause you make these parallels a lot on your show. What are some of the things that dogs have taught you about human beings?
I would say dogs have taught me more about human beings than human beings have, in that, you know, there's an element of face value, black and white, simple, basic psychology that exists in a dog's mind that you can use and apply it to everyday life and relationships. And that number one is that communication is absolutely everything. You know, and you hear that a lot. It's a very cliched, you know, kind of bullet point when people are talking about business or whatever, you know, but the reality of it is that, you know, that's something you have to focus on for it to really count. And I think a lot of times people, even though they know that, they may say that, they're still not very good at communicating. You know, and the nice thing about dogs is that, you know, you can't explain shit to them. Mm-hmm. So everything has to be done in action. You know, and just that simple tactic or principle or technique, whatever you want to reference it as, you know, has been more valuable than anything, is because, you know, you can talk a great game. You know, one of my favorite adages is, you know, what you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you say. Mm. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in that. And that, you know, most people, when they think I need to be a good communicator, that means you need to be well spoken. And while, yes, it's important, what's more important is do you back it up with your actions, you know, and the best way to communicate is to show people who you are, you know, and when you don't do that, you know, Obama was a phenomenal communicator. Right. In my, he was a tongue fucking snake oil salesman, you know, and I think that's where people get maybe the misconception on the communication piece, is thinking that I need to be able to sell ice to Eskimos and be this bullshit. There's a lot of people that are good at that, and maybe it gets you that sell or that foot in the door or whatever, but you know, when it's time to answer the fucking mail, people are going to pull your card and know you're full of shit if your actions don't back it up, you know. And the beauty and the simplicity and the elegance of a dog, that you can't bullshit a dog, you know. You have to follow through with your actions, and you have to use your, like, the bond and the relationship and the trust and that teamwork element that you just have to put the time in and invest in the relationship with that dog for him to trust you enough to do some of the things that we're asking them to do with or for us, that makes it so that, you know, it just kind of becomes second nature, and you start to, you know, integrate that physical communication piece into your day-to-day life. And so there are a ton of other parallels that exist in dogs and dog training, from, you know, selection of the right dog, same with selection of the right spouse or coach or, you know, business partner or boss or employee or whatever, is that, you know, how important selecting that right person or right entity is first, you know, makes everything easier to, like I said, the communication thing, or even just having balance. you know, balance in your life, balance in training, balance in nutrition, balance in outside versus inside time, balance for, you know, work versus play, balance in nutrition. I mean, you name it. You know, there are far more parallels in dogs and dog training to everyday life than I think a lot of people realize. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the neatest and most, I guess, flattering and satisfying pieces of feedback that I get from my online training community, which is, you know, people that for the first time in their life, they're the ones doing the training with their dog and communicating with their dog and having the ability, you know, to actually train and communicate with their dog and actually understanding the how and the why behind it. But to me, the neatest part of it is that there's so many elements of the other aspects of their life that improve because of that. You know, understanding that, you know, that you've got to put the time in and invest in the relationship and be able to communicate through your actions. You know, it's really neat to see how many people it improves their marriage, their relationship with their kids, their, you know, in the workplace relationships, or, you know, if it's a coach with his athletes or a teacher with their students or, you know, you name it. It all kind of translates and parallels into basic relationship investment. And, you know, it's really neat to see it help people. And that was the for sure the ultimate goal that I had in starting it.
It's really interesting what you do because it is about dogs, the dog selecting the dog, selecting the proper breed, selecting it for its genetic qualities. But at the same time, when you're placing a dog, you've really got to be a good judge of people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, so for the personal protection dogs or police dogs, working dogs that I select, there's absolutely a huge component of that. Police and military, it's less. I would say that it's still for sure there, but you've got a lot more flexibility. The personal protection dogs is enormous that way, where you know, you've got to be a very, very astute judge of people's character and their situation. And, you know, I've been doing it long enough to know, you know, just based on the dynamic that a household may have that's interested in a dog, I, on a regular basis, turn business down or just say, you know, hey, I don't think this is a good fit and essentially talk them out of a sale, because it's just not the right fit. On the same token, you know, from that training standpoint is, you know, understanding the right fit dog wise, whether it's, you know, a certain breed or the individual in a breed, you know, a lot of the, or I would say all of the online training components of what I do are, you know, people coming to me and signing up for the online training. These are normal, you know, everyday house pet owners that just want, you know, their dog in a better spot than they're at. They're not happy with their relationship. Now, they're not happy with where the dog is at from a training standpoint. So, you know, I have a series of videos and online forums that I go in and answer questions every week and interact with them and answer, you know, questions of some of their problems and what have you. And, you know, just seeing the transformation when that light bulb goes on and people understand, you know, what to do and how to do it. And most importantly, why it works. That's when they kind of cross over into being able to apply it to a lot of other things as well. It's really neat to see.
Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want, because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable too. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview. Obviously, you're a very busy man. You've got multiple components of your business. You know, right now you're on the road, just made a delivery. And you said a lot of times when you're delivering the dog, you're actually driving out to keep the dog off a plane. How do you structure your week and your days to stay on top of everything?
Well, it's really an element of prioritizing. You know, there's plenty of people that are every bit as busy as I am or busier. There's plenty of people that are less busy that are a mess. You know, to me, just like anything else in life, is that you've got to determine, okay, like almost like an ER nurse would triage a bus crash, you know, and there's 30 people coming in. Well, there's only four doctors and eight nurses and a handful of techs and whatever. So, you know, let's figure out what juice being worth the squeeze, what's the most important, what's the biggest priority, and then kind of task your way through those things. And I'm certainly not saying that I have it completely figured out and that I'm always firing on all cylinders. There's times where I misprioritize or drop the ball on something or what have you. But to me, the best way to at least minimize and mitigate that as much as possible is to have some sort of scheduling system, whether it's a panda planner that you're actually writing in, or, you know, using a calendar on your phone or computer or, you know, whatever in between, is that you have some system of saying, here's how I'm going to keep my things organized. Here's how I'm going to prioritize my day. And, you know, when you get to the point where, you know, enough people are contacting you or asking you either for your advice or, you know, they want, you know, to pitch a business idea or, they want you to come, you know, speak at an event or train a dog or sell them a personal protection dog or come to a police dog seminar or whatever, you know, you've got to learn to say no. And there's certain things that, you know, I'll just say, hey, I appreciate the offer, but no thanks. You know, and to me, when you get to that point, then it gets even more important, you know, to look at every opportunity and say, okay, hey, this may be a good opportunity, but is it better than these other ones? Or, you know, from a cost benefit analysis standpoint, you know, am I going to be throwing my time away by spending however much time it's going to take to do X, whereas Y is way more efficient and more profitable, you know, from a time management standpoint. And I think you've got to look at your personal life that way too. You know, pick the things that are important and realize you can't work 140 hours a week every week, and keep your sanity and mental health and have any relationships in your personal life that are worth a shit. And so you've got to prioritize those as well, and you've got to balance all of that. And I think for me, the combination of triaging and prioritizing, you know, what's the most important, and not feeling bad or guilty or giving a fuck about cutting the things that you just don't have time or just aren't important enough to you, just cutting them away and forgetting about them. You've got to be able to do that and not, you know, feel bad about it. But that's what's helped me enormously, at least try to stay on top of everything.
Right. And I think what's important about that is that if you're doing something that's not going to contribute to your overall mission, that's not going to fulfill your purpose, then essentially what you're doing is you're cheating yourself. You're cheating the people around you. You're cheating whoever's depending on you to get those more important things done. And, you know, what happens is you end up getting dragged all over the place, and you can really end up in a place that is not gonna, it's going to be further away from where you wanted to go in the first place than you ever thought. Right.
No, absolutely. You know, and that's, again, the parallel between business and personal life, I think, is pretty exact. And that, you know, it's, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. You know, you can be okay at a bunch of different things, or you can be an absolute fucking Jedi at a handful of them, or maybe it's just one, and that's fine too. But, you know, you've got to prioritize things and understand what's giving you the most bang for your buck, and not, you know, waste, you know, step over a dollar to pick up a dime, you know, and that, I think, is something that plagues a lot of people, is they end up wasting a lot of their time on shit that really is meaningless, you know, and miss out on a lot of things that they should be focusing more on. And it would probably make them a lot happier.
100%. And you got to know what your overall goal is. You got to know what your vision is in order to get there, right? You have to know where you want to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure that helps, and it's important. And the only reason I hesitate to say that it's necessary is that, you know, some people just don't fucking know, you know, and that's okay too, you know. But what I will say is, for that person that just doesn't know, start somewhere and start prioritizing things. And in prioritization, you'll learn if you were right or not. You know, if you never do it, you'll never fucking know. And, you know, that's the only way you're going to get good at prioritizing, just like every other thing in your life, is you got to fucking practice it. And if you don't, then you're going to be, you know, floating around and drifting around in a sailboat with no paddle, or a rowboat with no paddle, rather. And then where are you, you know? So, you've got to just put one foot in front of the other and start trying to do it. And that in and of itself will be your best teacher as to how to do it. Because a very common question when I give that advice, people say, well, how do you know what to prioritize? Well, fuck, you don't. You know, you don't until you start trying it. And then at the end of every week, reflect a little bit on that, you know, or whatever your cycle is. You know, maybe it's every morning, maybe it's once a week, maybe it's, you know, twice a month, maybe it's every month, whatever your scheduling kind of pattern is that, you know, as you go into the next scheduling, you know, mindset or session, is reflect on the last one and realize where you screwed up or where you nailed it. And just over time, you'll get to where, you know, you can schedule yourself and be really efficient and know what's worth worrying about, what's worth putting time into, and what's not.
Yeah. And you bring up a really important point there too, is you can't wait until everything's perfect for you before you start practicing something like that.
Yeah, it'll be dead before that happens.
Exactly. want to get back to the podcast real quick, because again, Mike Drop podcast, I listen to it regularly, love the show. You know, who was there a guest that really surprised you? I know, you know, a lot of the guys you bring on, I know that a lot of them are operators like you. But was there anybody who particularly surprised you as far as what you learned from them, or as far as what they went over?
You know, the first one that comes to mind is Dr. James Mitchell. I don't know what episode number it was, but it was in the first year. So it was earlier on. It was maybe in the teens or early 20s, maybe. But so he wrote a book called Enhanced Interrogations, and he was basically an Air Force colonel that, as he was getting out of the Air Force, he was retiring, and as his last kind of several years in that branch, you know, had an instrumental role in helping with SEER school, like the, you know, the logistic, or not the logistics, but the curriculum side of, you know, the psychology based tactics and what to do and why and all of that kind of stuff. So a lot of the brains behind the tactics and techniques used in SEER school and in interrogating. And what fascinated me the most was in reading the book is seeing how many parallels there were, again, as being a dog guy, but, you know, how many parallels there were between dog training and interrogating in terms of it really all boils down to you have a desired result and you're manipulating the environment and the subject. You know, in his case, it's a prisoner. In my case, it's a dog. And some people may say, fuck, your dogs are prisoners. Well, in essence, sort of, they kind of are. You know, obviously you're utilizing completely different tactics, and techniques to make things overwhelmingly positive. But you're still conditioning an animal to do what you want, you know? And so I was really fascinated by the parallels between how they use the environment and their sessions with these prisoners, to get what they want out of them. And where I think to pinpoint the most surprising thing, just from the entire conversation was that, you know, they weren't there to punish the prisoners. And that's where a lot of people had a hard time wrapping their mind around when they heard, you know, they were letting them work out and giving them like GNC supplements and letting them practice and utilize different martial arts, techniques and things to exercise and to practice. And a lot of people were pissed in hearing that. You know, but the biggest takeaway that he said was, you know, our job is not to punish these guys. That comes, you know, once they go through a trial, if they do, and then whatever the sentence is, then that's their punishment. We're interrogating them. So our job is to get as much out of these people intelligence and information wise as we possibly can. And how well he kind of details his accounts in that book of how he went about that was really fascinating for me. You know, the bringing soft guys on is fun. You know, we have a lot in common, usually makes for a really good and entertaining discussion and chew the fat or shoot the shit session, which, you know, everybody loves and they're popular. But those are pretty easy. I mean, it's kind of a softball for me. Whereas, you know, a guy like that, you know, has a very different background, even though he was in the military and his experiences in his book, you know, talking about right after 9/11, how the CIA brought him, you know, into their umbrella and he played an instrumental role in breaking Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of 9/11. You know, he spent hours and hours and hours interrogating this guy. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, different sections of the book that really kind of synopsize some of his discussions with some of these guys. And it's both scary and entertaining at the same time. But, you know, that was probably my favorite interview.
That sounds absolutely fascinating. You said the book was Enhanced Interrogations?
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. James Mitchell is the author and the gentleman that I'm talking about. And, I didn't want the interview to end, you know, while I was doing it. And, it was fascinating.
That's awesome. You also recently gave Eddie Gallagher a chance to tell his side of the story, which I definitely liked that episode as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. To me, that was a really important one to be told. There was, you know, pretty heavy narrative, that was out there in the media that was largely inaccurate. So I felt, partially obligated to say, you know, hey, I'm not going to, you know, throw the guy softballs and stroke his ego and say you didn't do anything wrong and not ask any tough questions. Like, I want to ask you the questions that I have and the same ones that most people have. And, you know, I thought it was a great interview. It certainly gave me a lot of positive perspective on who he is and what he didn't do and you know, kind of how the whole thing transpired to be what it was. You know, and I think that's important, you know, unfortunately, you know, when Trump got involved and even something as simple as like a lot of people, that hate Trump or, you know, that by default, because he got involved, hate Eddie, you know, because Trump had some role in it, does a huge disservice and kind of puts the cart before the horse and gives you the, you know, guilty until proved innocent type of environment, which is toxic. And, a lot of people, you know, primarily on the left, but there's certainly plenty of either middle of the road or even right wing type folks that don't like him or think that he's a murderer or whatever. And then the biggest misconception I think that I took away from is that a lot of people think that he was pardoned by Trump and he wasn't.
Right.
You know, I mean, he was railroaded in terms of pretrial confinement and access to lawyers and just a reasonable ability to be able to organize his team, to be able to rightly defend himself was cut at the knees over and over. And all Trump did was leveled the playing field enough to give him what he was duly owed, which is, you know, a shot at his day in court, which, you know, he had to fight to even get that. And even still with all of the challenges, you know, was wildly acquitted by a jury of his peers, you know, so that's the process. That's how it's supposed to work. And it did, you know, and it only worked, I think, even remotely well, or how it was supposed to, some semblance thereof, is because Trump got involved and made sure that he was at least given a fair shake. Because at first and for, you know, the better part of a year leading up to the trial, he just absolutely wasn't. And to me, partisan and politics aside, you know, anybody that has the mentality of, well, fuck him anyway, like, that's dangerous. That's right. I mean, that's really dangerous, you know, to say, well, I hate our president since he got involved. Fuck that guy, too. He shouldn't have his fair shake. Send him to fucking prison. You know, that's communist Soviet gulag bullshit, you know, and if that's what you think is just, then we've got much, much bigger problems than somebody who you think is a war criminal who isn't even. You know, so it was an important interview to do for sure. It was one that, you know, I knew that, you know, at least in some ways I would take some flack on and I don't give a shit.
Right.
You know, I don't ever do interviews or not do interviews because I'm worried about, you know, somebody thinking negatively. You know, I do the ones that I think should be done and I'll never apologize for that. But
what I really appreciated about that interview, as opposed to, let's say, if like 60 Minutes did an expose and they sat him down, having you as an experienced operator interview him brought forth so many valuable leadership lessons, because you saw the human dynamics behind everything that was going on. And I thought that you brought that out really well during that interview. And if anybody wants to get educated on that situation, I highly recommend listening to that episode.
No, I agree. I mean, and I think, you know, not to piggyback off of or steal any of Jocko's thunder, but, you know, when I was on his podcast, like the parallels between his first book, Extreme Ownership, and my training book, Team Dog, is they're really similar, in that, you know, ultimately, like, you've got to take the responsibility if things are fucked up. And if you don't, then you're never going to grow. You're never going to learn. And there's going to be, you know, continued resentment. So, you know, to me, it's important to say, you know, one of the questions that I wanted to make damn sure that I asked him is like, where do you feel you fucked up and how do you think you could have done better? Because nobody's perfect. And so it's easy to sit there, especially being railroaded like that, to just motherfuck the other guy and say that they were in the wrong 100%. But, you know, it's always, you know, two sides to every story. And, you know, here's an opportunity for you to hold yourself accountable publicly and explain what that looks like. And I think he did a great job in talking about it.
Now, I want to bring this up before we get off, because it's kind of like the elephant in the room as this conversation goes, but, you know, the way the country's going right now, with a lot of the political correctness, a lot of the leftists out there. I want to ask you this. Do you feel like there's been an actual change in the country, or do you feel like there's just a minority that's very loud right now because of social media and all that bullshit?
Well, I think it started as the latter and has turned into the former, unfortunately, in that because the vocal minority outshouts the silent majority, is that the silent majority, I think what you've seen since, say, like 1990, has been a casual and gradual shift towards what the vocal minority is screaming, and it's almost conditioning everybody else to abide by their bullshit. You know, and it continues to go down and down, you know, further and further. I mean, when you look at just say the presidential election, you know, if you take 2008 Barack Obama and put him on the debate stage, which is going down tonight in South Carolina, which will date this episode, but he would look like a Republican, you know, which I mean, to me, or borderline, I mean, he would look like a far right Democrat. You know, I mean, because I think a lot of people don't even realize, like in 2008, in that election, like even then he said, I think, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. Like imagine one of the Democratic candidates saying that, like they'd probably get hung, you know? So to see just from 2008 to now, like how far gone it is in terms of leftist policies that are, you know, all of these, you know, social engineering experiments and policies that from my perspective have, you know, so little to do with what's really important or worth worrying about. You know, to me, it's fucking scary.
Yeah, it's very scary. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me a lot, because after I got out of the military, I went into academia for a while, and I taught at the University of California for a little bit and ended up leaving. And one of the things that really bothers me is that, you know, traditionally we've looked at college as a way of upward mobility. So everybody wants to go to college, right? And when you go onto college campuses these days, it's like a complete indoctrination factory for this type of thought. And, you know, I'm seeing less and less value for people to send their kids off to a 4-year liberal arts education, because it seems like everybody's just getting indoctrinated.
From my perspective, 100%. And I would say that it's not less and less value. From my standpoint, there's zero value in going to college and getting a liberal arts degree in whatever, you know, 17th century French fucking literature. Like that is useless as tits on a boar at this point. The only college degrees, in my opinion, that are worth having are something that's a tangible skill set that has follow-on training, a doctor, a lawyer, you know, coding or web design, or, you know, anything in the tech industry, frankly, you know, engineering, things like that, where there's a specific skill set that you have to learn on the job that, you know, isn't somebody's fucking opinion. You know, those are really the only degrees that are even worth some of the paper that they're fucking printed on anymore. Most degrees, I think, are an absolute fucking scam at this point. Uh-huh. You know, and it sucks that that's the case, but it is. Between what they cost and what you get out of it, you know, to me, the American teenager is being fucking swindled by the institutions that are historically regarded as higher education. I think it's an absolute crock of shit.
Right. And not just the American teacher, not just the American teenager, but their parents and also taxpayers, because we're ending up paying for a lot of these loans that aren't getting paid off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to me, it borders on criminal letting, you know, 18-year-olds take out, you know, $160,000 in loans that's going to take them the rest of their fucking life to pay back, between compounding interest and the fact that whatever shit job they get out of college isn't going to come anywhere near what it's going to take to pay that off in any kind of timely fashion. And so, ultimately the student suffers, but yeah, in a lot of ways, the parents may suffer, or, you know, ultimately the taxpayer, especially if, you know, a guy like Bernie Sanders that, you know, says free college. Let's just say hypothetically that he actually had the ability to pull that off, which I don't think he does. I mean, between getting, even if he got elected, I don't see that happening, and that I don't think the House and Senate is going to approve something like that, because they've got a constituency to answer to and try to get reelected from, that is going to have their ass in a sling, you know, for doing something like that. So, you know, I paid my student loans off, even with the GI Bill, I still had, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of student loans that I had to pay off, you know? And so me, just like, you know, millions of other people across the country, feel like you're getting the short end of the stick. And then some, when people who didn't pay them off and, you know, weren't responsible enough or educated enough to, or educate themselves enough on the deal that they're getting themselves into, thinking that it's going to be okay on the other side, you know, they're being rewarded, and the people that did the right thing are being punished. And that's a real good way to cause fucking anarchy in this country.
Definitely. I definitely agree with you on that. Well, Mike, number one, said, I love your show. I think that the lessons that you bring out, just because you're so real in how you talk to people, and you bring things out of your guests that I don't think anybody else could do. So I think you're doing a great job with that. And I want to thank you for coming on here to talk to me and to talk to my audience. And knowing that most of my audience out there are U.S. Marine Corps, U.S. Army veterans, any last parting pieces of advice for these guys?
Well, first, I'd like to say thanks for A, having me on, and B, for the kind words on the show. I'm again humbled and honored that you know, to have that kind of feedback from you. So I appreciate it. In terms of, you know, advice for them, you know, to bring it back to one kind of singular thing is find your purpose. And that sounds like a fucking bumper sticker or a T-shirt or whatever, but it's legitimate. I mean, that's where happiness lies. You know, I can tell you from having been, you know, in different spectrums of the socioeconomic classes, you know, the bracket that you're in has largely no effect on your happiness. You know, there's times where I've been way more broke than I am now and happier, or vice versa, or whatever. And I can just tell you from experiences that money and success isn't what makes you happy. You know, what makes you happy is feeling like whatever the fuck it is that you're doing matters, you know, and to me, that's what purpose is. You know, you hear people say, oh, find your purpose, you know, whatever. Like, here's the reality of it, is that whatever the fuck it is that you get up in the morning, that should excite you. And if it doesn't, then you need to figure out whatever it is that is going to make you excited to get out of bed. And as you're falling asleep at night, thinking about what you're going to do the next day to continue whatever it is that you're excited about. If that's not taking place, fix it, you know, because until you do, you're not going to be happy. You're not going to be satisfied. And you're going to wake up when you're 68 fucking years old, and you're going to be like, where the fuck did my life go? And what did I just spend the last 7 decades doing? And to me, that's no way to live it.
That is so true. That is so true. And you know what? A lot of you guys listening out there, you guys are still young, and every day is a chance to figure that shit out. Every single day is a chance to figure that out. And man, that was absolutely amazing. And again, I want to thank you so much for coming on. To you guys at home, I want to say this. Number one, make sure you're checking out the Mic Drop podcast. We mentioned a couple of the interviews here. Every show I've listened to was absolutely outstanding. Definitely check out Mike's books. Where can people reach out to you on your website or social media? Where's the best place?
Sure. So for the online training, it's just teamdog.pet. And you can sign up there. You can go to tricos.com or mikeritland.com to find kind of everything else that I have going on. I've got a bunch of products, dog crates, a collar and leash, CBD oil, dog food, dog treats, you know, a lot of different dog products that all carry the Tricos label that are worth checking out. Speaking and all that kind of shit, mikeritland.com is fine. On social media, it's just at mritland on Instagram, just Mike Ritland on Facebook, and then each of my other brands, you know, Tricos, and then, you know, at Tricos Dogs, or just Tricos International on Facebook. Mic Drop Podcast, same thing. You can Google it and find it. It's on all the normal, podcast outlets, as well as on YouTube, the video version. But last thing that we didn't talk about, just I started a nonprofit about 10 years ago called the Warrior Dog Foundation, where we retire former either special operations, military, police, government law enforcement, federal law enforcement, working dogs. These are all dogs that were going to be euthanized if we hadn't taken them. We've taken in over 170 dogs in the last 10 years. And it's something that, while it's a labor of love, it's incredibly rewarding, and it's something we're very passionate about. So warriordogfoundation.org is where they can find that. And any and all support is greatly appreciated.
Wow, that is amazing. I had no idea that they would get euthanized after their service. That's insane.
Yeah, it's not common. Again, in 10 years, taking 170 dogs, where, in an industry where there's between 45 and 50,000 dogs and handlers, like, it's a very small percentage. But these are all the dogs that are, they're the Hannibal Lecters of the working canine world. They're the dogs that, are very dangerous. They're at a point where, the handler, the trainer, the collective entity that had them, that was operating with them, has determined this dog is too dangerous or too big of a pain in our ass to be able to retire to a handler or another member. And we're either going to euthanize them or they have to go to a sanctuary like Warrior Dog. So, it's for a lot of people out there, like, fuck, I'd love to give one of those guys a home. By all means, if you have the resources and the level of competency training wise to accommodate it, please do apply through warriordogfoundation.org. But I will say, there's a reason we have all of these dogs, and it's not because they're easy to deal with. Right. It's the exact opposite. So, they're very, very difficult to deal with, but it's worth it. And it's really nice to, get up and walk around the kennel building and see, right now we've got 25 dogs, and every single one of those dogs, you can look in their eyes and think, because we had the ability and the support and generosity of people all over the country and even all over the world donate and help out our cause, is that I can look each one of these dogs and know that they're not, in a box full of ashes on somebody's desk because they didn't want to deal with them or couldn't deal with them or whatever. So it's a very rewarding element of what I do. It's a big pain in my ass, but I do love it.
Well, that's amazing, man. We're going to get all those links up on the show notes for this episode for you guys to check out. And again, like I said, go check out Mike Ritlin, go check out Trikos, and you guys listen, life is a precious thing, right? And that's essentially what all this stuff we talked about today comes down to, so that you guys can go out there and you can live amazing lives, because serving in the military should be one of the greatest things you do with your life. It shouldn't be the only thing. And Mike's definitely demonstrated that. And hope you guys do too. So with that, guys, I want to thank you all for listening. And we'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. Mike Ritlin, thank you again. And this is Chris and Mike, and we are out. All right, guys, I hope that you enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed speaking to Mike. I have to say, I really like Mike. I really like his podcast, the Mike Drop Podcast. We're going to have links to his show, as well as all the links to every aspect of his business, his online training, Trikos. We're going to have links up for the Warrior Dog Foundation. Everything will be up on the show notes for this episode. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor, let people know. Share this episode out, write about it on iTunes, give us a written rating and review, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Beyond that, if you want to support the Warrior Soul Podcast in other ways, I talked about a number of them at the beginning of the show, you can check out our shop, warriorsoul.shop. We've got some amazing t-shirts up there. You can check out the Warrior Soul Academy up at warriorsoul.academy. That's where I got a lot of my books on fitness, on nutrition, on business. If you're looking to build your own e-commerce brand, or if you're looking to build your own coaching business, I've got courses up there for you on that. And then beyond that, we've got the Warriors Obituary Society, which is something that I talked about toward the middle of the show. That's our private mastermind. And you guys can come in, You can find a group of like-minded individuals who are going after goals, who are going to hold you accountable to those goals. And we've got our 8-week development program that's going to help you out with getting really clear on your vision, getting really, really specific on what you want to accomplish, focusing in on your fitness, focusing in on your personal finance, your relationships, your career, or your business. So you can check that out at www.warriorobituarysociety.com. And as always, we will be here with more content. If you want to check out our other episodes, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, any other podcast player in the world, we're on it. And you can always go to our main site at www.warriorsoulagoge.com. That's A-G-O-G-E. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at warriorsoulagoge, A-G-O-G-E. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at warriorsoulgear, G-E-A-R. And that's it, guys. Thank you so much. I'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. Get out there and live your best lives while you can. And I am out.